Lake Effect continues on WUWM. I'm Audrey Nowakowski. The Indianapolis 500 is one of the world's most famous races. 33 of the fastest drivers of open-wheel cars partake in the ultimate competition, and no drivers are guaranteed spots. Since 1911, drivers earn their starting place based on the order of qualifying time. It's obvious when you look at the drivers on the track that this sport is still dominated by men. But one woman whose name made history in the sport of racing is Janet Guthrie. In 1977, 39-year-old Guthrie became the first woman to qualify for and compete in the Indy 500. During the era of the Battle of the Sexes, Guthrie's path to qualifying was not an easy one. Surviving race to race was often the case, as Guthrie and her team dealt with mechanical issues, the struggle for sponsorships, and public contempt. Guthrie's legacy is not widely known today, but filmmaker Jenna Ricker is helping to change that with her first documentary, Qualified. It tells the story of the former aerospace engineer turned racer, both with archival footage and interviews with Guthrie's team and the woman herself. Ricker joined me in the studio last November to talk about the documentary and what it was like to work with and get to know Janet Guthrie. Ricker begins by explaining how she came to know of Guthrie's amazing story.
Well, I was introduced to the Indianapolis 500 as a spectator. Obviously, I knew about the race. I had listened to it on the radio as a kid and all that good stuff. But I went to my first Indy 500 race about 10 years ago and was blown away by the spectacle of it, the endurance of it, the crowds that were there. And so I became an instant fan. And then a few years ago, after my last film was out, we were on our way to the Indy 500 again, and I said, hey, who was the first woman? Like, just out of nowhere, I had this thought. And one of the other producers on the film and a collaborator of mine who introduced me to the race said, Janet Guthrie, 1977. So I started looking her up, and I discovered that she had written an autobiography, not ghostwritten, her, you know, pen to paper, and it was excellent. And so I reached out to her and I said, hey, you don't know me, Janet, but what if I were to make a film about your life? So this is my first documentary. So it was an introduction to that. And obviously, we do have the hopes to make the narrative as well. She had so much story that it's lent itself well to both mediums.
Definitely. And the world of auto racing today is definitely not the same world as it was in the 1970s. And you do a great job of painting that vivid picture with, you know, great archival footage. You know, I had no idea just how at the mercy of mechanics a lot of things are.
Right. So
did you have difficulties finding these primary materials that you wanted to piece the story together?
Well, it was great fun, actually, finding those things. So one of my hopes going into the project was, can we tell this entirely archivally? Like, we'll have interviews with our folks, but then I want to spend the rest of the time in archive. I don't want to reenact if we can help it, all that kind of stuff. And we were just so lucky that it was there. We had a lot to choose from. Then Janet had her own personal films, and her brother had films of, you know, that he would follow around on the track. So it was a gold mine. In fact, the hardest part was choosing what we had to leave out.
Yeah, what to include.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah, the sports changed a lot, especially in the mechanics area in particular. I mean, it was so innovative back then. People like her, you know, her original team owner, he had a shot at coming into Indy if he built his own car. That doesn't happen anymore. So much money, and it's much more streamlined, mm-hmm. similar cars, similar everything. So that was another piece of it that was really fun to discover, was the mechanics. And then how much at the mercy you are. Can your car even make it 500 miles? So it's cool.
She was obviously a bit of an anomaly to be a female racer, especially in the Indy and NASCAR scenes, not necessarily in the recreational other lower level
right,
races.
Right, not in the sports car, right.
But she also had the advantage of a background in engineering. You know, she herself was the one understanding the car, helping to build the engine, things like that. And I feel like perhaps drivers even today aren't that involved.
No. And then, you know, some of them were, but no, they weren't often, even back then. And today, I don't think so. You know, there's whole telemetry. There's all this computerized stuff going on. Back then, that was just beginning, really. You know, so much of it, if you were to ask her, she would say it was out of necessity. Like, she had no desire to become you know, a grease monkey, but it was part of her reality. She didn't have the money to find Cruz, so she built her own, you know, her first car engine, her sports car, and it continued from there. But what was really fun was to hear from the people who worked with her, who were chief mechanics, who would say that they never worked with a driver who had the kind of awareness and ear for the car. So she could take the car on the track and come back and say, listen, I think it's the this on the that. And I can't even begin to like say the right stuff. But she could do it. And, you know, both of the chief mechanics that we interviewed in the film said, you know, you'd think, well, no, that's crazy. No one could hear that on the track. And then when they would find the problem, it would indeed be that thing that she heard or that thing that she noticed. So she had a real connection to the car itself.
And that was there from the beginning. She felt this connection, this urge to race. So, you know, it was her passion. She's kind of described as a reluctant driver turned feminist turned trailblazer. You know,
she just
wanted to drive.
Yes,
and
yes.
Being the first woman to do the Indy was an afterthought for her, but not for the public, for everyone else. So you mentioned she did write a book, but was it a challenge to get her to agree to sharing her story intimately? I know you kind of cold called her.
So. I did cold call her.
Yeah.
It turns out 411 is still a thing.
Okay.
So I think it was the challenge was simply she would be willing. It seemed as if to me she'd be willing to do it if we were to get things going. I think she'd been approached many times over the years, even back in the day. Hollywood came and bought the rights to her story in the 70s. Nothing happened. So I think where she's at in her life now was like, okay, if you really want to, I guess you'll figure out a way to make this happen and then you let me know. And, you know, we were kind of waiting on her, like, well, do you want us to? Do you not want us to? And then once we pitched to ESPN and they got excited about it and we're like, let's do this, I called her up and I said, okay, we're going. And she said, okay, let's go.
Let's do it. Yeah. Does she view her own story's significance differently as time has passed?
I think she views it. What's interesting about her is the person you meet today feels very much like the person you meet in archive. She still feels like, look, all I wanted to do was race cars. Everything else was secondary. What I think she will say is that she appreciates what it was now. At the time, in a way, she didn't. She didn't recognize. She was a reluctant feminist, as you said. Like, she didn't recognize quite. Well, first of all, she didn't understand what the issue was, but then she came to realize, like, oh, this is something I should embrace. I should use this as an example for other women, and I should appreciate that that's what it is. So it's kind of great to see her arc in that way, her trajectory of embracing it. And I think she looks back, look, she's not happy with how things turned out, and rightly so. And I kind of love that about her. I love that she wasn't like, well, so, you know, in hindsight, mm-hmm. there is no correct hindsight. You know, she got the shaft, basically.
Yeah.
And so I think she has accepted that life goes on and all of that good stuff. But I don't think that she says I'm at peace with the fact that I didn't get the shot I should have.
Right. I love how she refers to the roundy round boys.
Yes.
Like all the trouble and stir that she caused. But, you know, not only is the story a testament to Janet, but I also saw it as a testament to the independent team owners. And it's a very different picture today. It's all corporate sponsorship. Mm-hmm. It's all about the sponsorship. It's whose stickers are on your car.
Yeah.
And despite her having a unique story and having the attention and the other male racers being afraid that that would be a disadvantage for them, that all the sponsors are going to want to go to her.
Right.
That it was the opposite that happened.
Yeah. No, it was so interesting how I felt like on some level when I would read her, when I read her book and then I read contemporary books of the time and other autobiographies of her competitors, I felt at some point that they were just trying to find a reason. And that became a valid one because it was really starting to happen in the sport that sponsorship was coming in. And the ironic thing was you would think they would go for the thing that's getting all the press and all the attention, but they didn't, mm-hmm. you know, to your point. So it was weird that some of the other drivers who were against her would point to that. It was hard for everybody to get sponsorship, and it continues to be hard for everybody. She was just in a class of her own, so it was not just hard, it was a much bigger mountain. you know?
And yeah, living race to race.
Yes, living race to race. I mean, that's one of the things that is also really impressive about the time, the short time she was in the sport, that she has, in the short time she did, has a better record than contemporaries who'd been driving, you know, 5-10 years more than her. She didn't ever race a full season, and you're not going to finish, you know, and you're not going to win if you're not racing a full season. So that she did what she did, I won't say it, I won't give it away, but that she did what she did becomes even more impressive if you understand, you know, what racing is.
Well, and I was even more impressed by her and her grit, not just for one instance where she was physically injured. So first she broke off her arm cast so she could race.
Yeah.
She's driven on a broken ankle in a race, shifted with her left non-dominant arm
because across her body
because her right wrist was broken. I mean, if that doesn't show grit and determination, I don't know what is. Or wearing styrofoams on the bottom of your feet because your engine's so hot. Like,
I
can't imagine like putting yourself through that.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. That's what made her a racer, a true racer. I remember when I was sitting with Johnny Rutherford interviewing him, and I asked him about, you know, the broken wrist and stuff. And he said, you know, he told me that at one point they had to duct tape his hand to the shift because he had broken something and he needed to keep it on there so that it went. This is what racers did. It was so important to compete. And there was a contemporary writer at the time, a well-known sports writer, who had talked about the fact when that information came out after that race that she had a, you know, broken a wrist. I think it was Al Unser who'd said like, oh, that was reckless or something like that. And he had won the race that year. And the sports writer said, you better believe if Al Unser did that, he would have been hoisted on people's shoulders and celebrated. Like, it's not fair. She's always being held to a different standard. And the fact that she was that gritty and that determined, again, like, it's very bittersweet.
Yeah, it is. And she mentions in the film, I didn't have a thick skin, I would deal with it. But to me, it seems like she did, you know, like more than that, more than just dealing with it. And I'm sure she was worried about just the day to day operations and how to make it work so she could race the next time.
Yeah.
But all the criticism, threats, handling.
I mean, it was bad. Yeah. And her crew, she would be right out there with her crew. A lot of drivers, the way the qualifying works is you push your car up along the pit lane. And whether you're going to qualify or not, you had to do that. And so she would, with her car having all these troubles, you know, many days she had to be online moving it up, but not knowing she wasn't going to qualify. And there'd be all sorts of, like, vitriol being thrown at her. And she would go out. A lot of drivers aren't out there, and she would go out there and be with her crew because she didn't feel like it was fair for them to take it. But going back to that thick skin thing, I always love that line because I hear what you're saying. Like, it seems like, well, obviously she did, but I think that's what's so interesting about her. She didn't, and she did it in spite of, you know, like, she did hear all of it. It did hurt her. She did, you know, go back and kick tires and, you know, probably wipe a few tears away, but she was going to do it no matter what. Like, if that's what it took, fine, you know? And I think that's the difference between, you know, champions or people who are so that determined and the rest of us who might be like, you know, maybe, maybe not.
Yeah.
So
she also mentioned that women keep reinventing the wheel. She wasn't the first.
Yeah. I mean, that was interesting, too. Like, again, it wasn't in the IndyCar, but it was an open car racing. But the turn of the century, et cetera, where these women were, I guess, further into the turn of the century, but relatively close, were racing. And their history is totally forgotten. One of the other women that's talked about in the film, nobody knows who she is. And it's upsetting because if we don't know our history, it is like pushing the rock up the mountain one more time and thinking you're the only one who's doing this. And it stinks not to be able to feel like you have company or a mentor or somebody to talk to about it. And, you know, sadly, too, I think if you look at racing today, we're still dealing with one race a year for some of these women who are incredibly talented, who've proven that they could be out there, and the sponsorship still isn't there.
When you first knew of her story and had this image of her in your brain, and then you actually meet her and you're working with her and you're filming, how did that image change?
That's a great question. Well, it's so funny because I feel like I've been connected to her now for a couple years. I have to make myself think back. In her book, she really gives you a sense of her personality and her sense of humor. And she's a very, very smart woman. And when I spoke with her on the phone that first time, I think I was struck with like, wow, this feels like the woman I just spent all this time with. You know, it's a pretty thick book, you know, a lot of pages. But I think what struck me is she has this quality of like a desire to have fun and a lightness to her, you know, that even as smart as she is and as thoughtful as she is, there's still this little kind of twinkle in her eye about stuff. And it was fun to see that, you know, she would crack really funny jokes while we sat and interviewed her. We sat with her for 3 days in Aspen where she lives, and she would sit where, you know, you'll see her in the film. She would sit there for like these long, long stretches. And I would say, hey, Janet, you want to take a break? And she's like, nope, we can keep going. We can keep going. And at one point, the producer, Caroline Waterloo, had said, you know, I forget she was used to sitting in a car and doing this for hours.
Like,
yeah, exactly. Yeah. She's got endurance.
No G-force to deal with.
Yeah, exactly. So this is a piece of cake. But she would sit there. And then if we did take a break, you know, she would make some funny offhanded comment and have the crew laughing. And, you know, it's just... yeah. So you feel like there's more stories in there. And when she does, she lets them a little, you know, lets you in on some of those things and some of her more personal things. And it's a real honor, really, to be the recipient of that.
Do you know she gets out on a track and just drives?
She's so funny. She had said to me at one point that just around 70 years old, she thought, well, maybe that her career, maybe she wouldn't have a career as a her career was over. But she did teach sports car racing to folks. There's a track up in Aspen. So she would teach sports car racing for a long time. And I think somewhere in her 70s, she backed off from doing that. But she has this great story of these two young boys. I don't know if they were twins. They were brothers, 16 roughly. And their dad asked Janet if she could teach them some of the driving skills and some of the stuff, just mostly so they could get an understanding, because I think they were wanting to go hot rod and do whatever. So she took them out in her Jeep. She has this Cherokee Jeep. Actually, she taught them, you know, this is the apex and the entry point, the apex and the outro point. And they were doing it and they weren't getting it right. So she said, pile into my Jeep. I'll take you around. I'll show you what I'm talking about. So she said one of her great highlights was taking them out, because they were definitely looking at her like, oh, here's this woman in her, you know, early 70s. This is, what's my dad doing? This is hilarious, right?
Yeah.
So she puts them in her Jeep and she takes them out. And she said they were hanging on to everything as she was doing the turns. And they were like, oh, my God, you know. So I can picture that so clearly in my mind.
Yeah, with a big old smile on her
face.
Yeah,
exactly. Loving every second of it. Yeah, so, and it took her a long time to go back to Indy after everything that happened, but it has been really nice to be there with her and see how many people are like, Janet, Janet, you know, calling her name. And you know, she's 82 now, and that's pretty awesome.
Well, and hopefully even more people will know her story and her significance.
Yeah.
Jenna Ricker, thank you so much for coming in to talk about it.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Jenna Ricker is the director of the ESPN Films 30 for 30 series documentary, Qualified. I spoke with her in November of 2019 while she was in town for screenings during the Milwaukee Film Festival. You can find more information at WUWM.com, and you can also watch Qualified on the streaming services ESPN Plus and Disney Plus.